part-time fanboy.
Part-time fanboy doing my thing.
More powerful than a locomotive.
Hey, sorry, I'm a bit early.
No, it's totally fine. That's great. It's better early than late, I can tell you that.
I just always, like, I'm never sure. People, like, sometimes just, like, get in the call 15 minutes early or whatever. So unless they say something, I just jump in 10 minutes early just in case.
Yeah, I tend to do that too. It's just been a bit of a busy day on my part, but I'm glad to have you on the line.
And nice to meet you.
Yeah, nice to meet you virtually. So yes. First name is David and last name is it Hazan?
That's correct.
Oh, nailed it. Cool.
Got it in one.
Nailed it. Yeah. I can screw up people's names pretty good, but I got this one. David Hazan, thank you for joining me on the Part-Time Fanboy podcast.
Thanks for having me.
Cool. I should say my name is Christian Horn. Again, I will say your name, David Hazan, is on the podcast joining us, a very special guest. You have two books out right now, correct? Or they're coming
out? Coming out in the next 2 months.
Okay. So we've got two books. We've got like about an hour to discuss, so we can split our discussion between the two. This may be a Solomon-like choice. Which one would you like to talk about first?
Let's talk about Monomyth first, because it's the first one off the rank. It's coming out in a week. Next week. Yeah.
Great. Okay, Monomyth, and that is coming out from Mad Cave Studios, correct?
Yep, that's correct.
Yeah. And I should say I enjoyed both of the books, or at least the first issues that I got. So I very much appreciated both stories. So thank you for sharing them with me. Don't hide PR connected me to you. So thanks again to Melissa for setting this up. But
isn't she just the best?
She is the best. She's like literally the best. That's so funny that you say that, because I actually sent her the video from the Karate Kid, like, you're the best around, you know, telling her that she was the best the other day. So yeah, she's amazing. From Don't Hide PR, and she connected us both. And Monomyth is the first one that we'll talk about. So now we know which one is your favorite, David. Because you want to talk about it.
I worked chronologically.
Yeah,
chronologically. Words are escaping me today, which is concerning for a writer. But I just figured we'd talk about the one that's up first.
No, that's totally fine. I'm just breaking your chops. We're having fun here on the Part-Time Fanboy podcast. Well, let's talk about Monomyth. I mean, this is a like really beautiful looking book, a really great story. Do you want to give people the elevator pitch on Monomyth?
Sure. So Monomyth is... I'll give you the X meets Y pitch first.
All right.
I guess, because I think that's the it's like Harry Potter meets the Magicians meets Saw.
You went there. Nice. Cool. Okay. Go on.
So essentially, the last ailing wizard summons the descendants of several magical bloodlines to his castle in the hopes of finding a successor. But what they find there isn't some sort of like mystical magical adventure. It's dark and bloody and terrifying. And it'll shake them to their very cores.
Nice. Yeah, this was a very cool sort of like, the first issue is like the gathering of the team, correct?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like pulling everyone together and them, like a group of people kind of like realizing their destiny. It's very cool. It is a little bit dark. I don't think it went quite Saw in the first issue too much, did it? I mean, but
I mean,
What's that?
I mean, I don't want to spoil the last couple of pages, but...
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. Okay. I see what you're talking about. I've got it on my tablet. I know. I thought that was a really cool, thing that happened in the... I don't want to spoil anything. But anyway, let's talk more about, this book. Why... Well, first, let's start with the title. Why Monomyth?
I mean, it's really a story about stories, and I think we had a different title originally, and we bandied about what to call it. And at the end of the day, we decided to, name it after the hero's journey, because the book was born from me kind of responding to Harry Potter and saying, well, we as writers put our characters through a lot of trauma. So why would you ever want that letter from the magic school? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, considering how much damage was dealt to Harry Potter emotionally and physically, why would you ever say yes to this?
Yeah, that's a good point. I don't know that I ever thought about it on that end, at least from the Harry Potter, maybe because they're kids. I kind of always wondered, like with the X-Men, I was like, yeah, I don't know. Can I just hang out and like not be involved like a bit, you know?
Yeah. Do we need to go to the school? Can we not just like be mutants elsewhere?
Yeah. Exactly.
That thing got blown up a bunch of times.
Yeah, exactly. No, so that's like a really good sort of like starting point for you. And then you mentioned also The Magicians, which I think I've only watched the first season of, and then I lost track. It was a show that I very much liked. But what is it about, like, say, magic and stuff like that? I mean, it sounds like you're talking about, like, the responsibility that you get and the weight of that once you receive it, when you get these sort of, like, magical abilities, right?
Yeah, and... Magic, to me, and in the world of Monomyth, magic just, it can't come from anywhere else other than pain.
Oh.
So, like, trauma informs kind of the power of the magic, because when you think of, like, if magic is a story, then you have to go from... from a low point to a high point by telling that story. And so you need to start somewhere really awful.
Gotcha. Yeah, no, I mean, having read the book and looked at everything, it sounds like your take on magic is going to be more at the forefront, not necessarily, because I mean that's sort of the attraction of like Harry Potter and stuff like the X-Men, and and like you said, the hero's journey is that someone would come to you, or that you discover one day that you have these this amazing lineage or heritage or abilities or whatever it is, right? And that you are destined to change the world. And it seems like what you're kind of saying in this interview and in the book is like, hey, that might not be so great, right?
Yeah. And also that, like, you're not only going to change the world, but this will also change you. And it might not be in a good way.
Yeah. I mean, it's what's interesting to me too, is like, you've got a varied cast of characters. And again, it's only the first issue and it's sort of like the gathering of the team, but you sort of get the basics on them, and they sort of range in kind of what kind of circumstances they're going through in their lives, and then also what kind of people they are. Can you speak to the characters a little bit, or like the situations that they find themselves in before they get these powers or abilities or whatever we want to call them, I guess?
Yeah, so in every instance, each of them is in a little spot of trouble in some respects. But I really wanted to try to encompass as many sort of heroic archetypes as I could, but ground them and make them feel like real people as well.
Yeah.
And we really, once you hit the second issue, we really dive deep into who these people are and, in a sense, how their damage has led them here. Mm-hmm. But yeah, the cast I really wanted to sort of talk about as well, diversity in storytelling and use the lens of Monomyth to do that.
Sure, sure.
So you have a really diverse cast of characters, and you have to look at it critically and think about why each one of them is there.
Yeah.
And how they could weaponize why they're there in the future.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Can you talk to me a little bit about sort of, you know, because there's at least one that isn't, or at least presents a little bit like they aren't like a super great person. Can you talk to me about sort of like the range of like, I guess, emotional spectrum that all these characters are in?
Oh, yeah. You know, it's like we're all more than just one thing, right?
Yeah.
And you can assume that somebody is a horrible person by only the actions that you see in, the first issue of a comic. But the reality is much more complicated. And they're all sort of. It's really hard to talk on this without spoiling too much.
Sure, sure.
They're all sort of coming from different emotional places, and part of what drives them is what they're really looking for. And to start with, they're all just looking to go home and back to their lives. But that becomes far more complicated as the story develops.
Sure, sure. And so why generally, like, why magic? Like, why was magic the thing that you decided to, as opposed to, like, general superpowers or, you know, whatever it is that, you know, fantasy authors will kind of pull out to make the sort of thing that people use to, you know, fight whatever evils in their world or that sort of thing. What was it about magic that appealed to you? I mean, you mentioned Harry Potter, you mentioned the magicians. I'm assuming that you were kind of fans of that sort of thing.
I've loved fantasy ever since I was a kid. Uh-huh. Part of also choosing this was coming to grips with the fact that, you know, She Who Must Not Be Named has sort of really trashed a generation's worth of fans. But I think there's something about the idea, dissecting the idea of magic, rather than superpowers, which are almost always reduced to science. Uh-huh. Whereas magic oftentimes, it's like sometimes an author's approach to magic will be methodical and bound by rules and scientific, looking at, say, the Patty Rothfusses or the Brent Weekses of this world, right? But then on the other hand, you have the Tolkien-esque view of things, which is that magic is supposed to be this kind of mystifying deus ex machina force that corrects this story and I think that that's an interesting thing to explore, and what are the rules, what are the storytelling rules that bound that kind of magic, and that's what we're trying to delve into a little bit.
That's interesting, because I was just thinking, like, as you were talking, like, when I was a kid, when I was younger, it was very much like superpowers, right? Superheroes and stuff. And if there was a character, like, let's say, like, Doctor Strange or Doctor Fate in comics, I was like, yeah, I'm not so much into that. And I mean, I loved, like, stuff like Dungeons and Dragons and things like that, and all those fantasy movies and things like that. But, I mean, I've had other authors on this podcast that have talked about magical books, and the thing that kind of like their magical stories or things based in magic or fantasy. And the thing that kind of like just popped into my head was that maybe it magic had to be learned and you had to learn it. Whereas like Superman, he could just fly, you know, and lift things and stuff like that. And you were just ready to go. Maybe it's an indication of my laziness or something like that. I mean, it sounds like these characters are very much going to have to go through their own crucible to like learn whatever abilities that they develop, at least in this first issue, right?
Absolutely. And, you know, I think that's part of the hero's journey aspect of this, right?
Yeah.
But yeah, you look at characters like Constantine, for instance.
Yeah.
What an amazing and magnetic character. And he kind of, once you put him instead of in his own world, once you put him in the DC universe, his magic has to have limits and boundaries and rules to it. And I think also comic book fans are like very fixated on what isn't canonical, who can beat who.
Yeah.
Like there has to be a science to everything. And I kind of just wanted to, with one hand, throw that science out the window, but then the other hand say, all right, well, my magic system is based in something other than, you know, a set of rules, but there have to be a set of rules to how you can manipulate a story using magic. And so we find out those rules, we get reminded that there are rules or notified that there are rules from the last couple of pages of issue one. And as the rest of the story develops, we learn more and more about it.
Oh, that's interesting. That's another aspect too, is like, it always seemed like stuff was just kind of made up. Like there were no boundaries, right? Like with certain characters, yeah, at least superhero characters, like it was like, okay, he can do this, this, and this, but he can't do this. Like with, whenever I read something like, just using Doctor Strange as an example, because he's probably the most popular one, it was like he could do anything, right? Like, and then when they needed a limitation, it just kind of came out of thin air. Do you have like a set thing that you sat down and wrote and were like, okay, this is my magic world, these are the constraints or the things or the abilities that you can and cannot do? Like, did you sort of create your own, like, maybe like RPG, like rule book for your own story, like the background of it?
My pitch document has 6 fundamental rules of magic.
Oh, cool.
But because magic is about manipulating stories, the stories can at times break those rules. But I don't want to, if I give them away, then I give the game away. one example is that if you mess with nature, nature will fight back.
Oh, cool.
Because nature doesn't like having people tell its story, is kind of the rationale behind that. Because nature has its own way of doing things.
Yeah.
So, you know, there are limits to, very strict limits to what someone can do with nature magic in Monomyth. But if you are trying to encourage nature, for example, to do things that it would otherwise want to do, but for something else, using your spell, then that may work. But you have to, risk it in order to find out, and there are very serious consequences for trying to do magic in a way that the rules of the universe will not allow.
Oh wow, so you have like 6 fundamental rules or guidelines, but is that something that will be eventually revealed in the book, or is that just for your own background and like you said, you have it in the pitch document so that people know like how far things can go or what the sort of guidelines are?
There are, so most of that is revealed. Some of it is sort of, I didn't want to explicitly state, but it's heavily implied. But I didn't want to sort of reveal the machinery behind the curtain, you know what I mean?
Sure.
Too much. because then you end up with people going, well, hold on a second, and delving like into the, you know, abstract detail of every single magical interaction to try and find the plot holes. And
sure,
that's antithetical to this whole magic as stories scenario.
Yeah,
so some things are left a bit mystified, some things will be told in detail, and you have to kind of keep delving in order to find out.
That's cool. So you mentioned,
and you find out as the characters find out.
Okay. Gotcha. So there's nobody that reveals like a holy tomb or a text or anything like that. That is like, here's how it works. They basically, as they go, they kind of discover what their limitations are, correct? Or what the limitations of their world are, right?
Yeah.
And how many issues is this? Is this going to be an ongoing series or a limited series, or?
It's six issues.
Nice.
It's six issues in and out. I do have some vague idea of a sequel in my head, but that's for, and it will be wildly different, but that's sort of really dependent on what Mad Cave wanted to do. Obviously, if you buy the book, then we have a chance to make more. But it's six issues, a complete tale in six issues. And I really hope people enjoy what we're trying to do here and broaden their minds a little bit, because it does get a bit weird, wacky, and abstract as we go.
No, that's good. I mean, that's good. I mean, one of the things I very much loved about the book was the art, right? Like, I mean, from the beginning, you're sort of like, oh, this is very, it seems like Lord of the Ringsy-ish, right? Like from when you open it. But then as you go on, you're going between like a magical world and a modern world, and things are happening in kind of two different settings, because there's sort of like a Gandalf-like character that is like gathering all these people together. Can you speak to how you went about finding your artists and like what you were looking for and what you found? I mean, what is the name of your artist again?
Cecilia Lovalvo is the line artist, and Marissa Louise is the colorist.
Nice.
And Cecilia and Marissa were both found by Mad Cave.
Oh, gotcha.
Yeah, Mad Cave pitched Cecilia to me, and I saw a horror story that she did for one of their anthologies, and I was like, yes, please. it was a pretty immediate like them pitching the artist to me being like, yep, let's do it. And yeah, it's like these scratchy lines, but then it all, like with Marissa's coloring, all just feels very smooth and fluid, like and you can see the contrast between those like magical and real world scenes just so clearly, and yet it all feels seamless.
Yeah, it's a gorgeous looking book. I mean, it was definitely the sort of thing that I opened up and I was like, oh my, like this looks very cool. And it also kind of like, at least that first page very much establishes the setting. Like, you know what you're in for. Here we go. This is what I'm going to. And then it also kind of like takes its own route where you're like in and out, where I thought it was going to start off again, like Lord of the Rings or something like that. And then it goes in a very kind of different direction. So well done. Well done with that aspect of it.
Thank you. I don't know that I can take much of that credit. Cecilia and Marissa have done a fantastic job. And also, I would be remiss without mentioning the lettering, which is done by the fabulous Lucas Gattoni, who is my longtime collaborator. And I kind of knew, because we were getting weird and metatextual with this one, that I was going to need somebody who really had a passion for not just the science of lettering, but also the art of lettering, and who could really put their own artistic spin on the book with the letters. And so my first thought is always Lucas, but specifically with this, my first thought was Lucas. And he knocked it out of the park.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's a beautiful book altogether package. I mean, it's definitely got me interested in checking out the, you know, upcoming issues and what's coming down the pike, because I mean, it definitely is that sort of thing. I mean, I like how you described it as sort of like, I mean, you know, like dark magic, dark, like a little bit of Saw and stuff like that. It's so funny that you had to remind me of the ending, because I was like, oh yeah, that happens. But just how dark and horror are you going to dive into? Because I mean, it seems like there's not a lot of, I mean, I guess Harry Potter in some instances could be considered frightening, right? Aspects of it, like Voldemort, maybe to like younger readers. And even in The Magician, there's some like dark stuff, at least in the bits that I watched. But how dark do you think this book will get? I mean, well, think, not know, because you've already written it and, it, you know, the six issues are coming out.
Yes.
Yeah.
This is a horror book.
Okay.
It's a fantasy horror book.
Oh, nice. Nice.
Yeah. So it gets real creepy, real weird, and real bloody real fast.
Has there been anything like that? I mean, I can't think off the top of my head, like a horror series or a movie or anything like that, that's straight up horror, but with like a group of magic users trying to fight the horror. Is there anything like that? Because this seems like it's kind of unique in that aspect to me.
Look, I couldn't mention from the top of my head. I'm sure someone's done it before.
Sure.
It can't be the first time someone's, you know, mashed up those very specific genres. But I mean, a lot of The Magicians had a lot of horror in it, especially the first season, that villain with the butterflies covering his face. That was creepy as hell.
yeah. It sounds like you're going to go a bit darker, though. I mean, it sounds like, you know, because I mean, obviously with Harry Potter, you've got like an age range that you're pitching to. And, you know, The Magicians was kind of like a sci-fi, you know, I mean, it's aimed maybe more towards adults, but it sounds like you're going, I mean, when you say Saw, it's like, okay, all bets are off. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah. There's, it's more, certainly more gruesome than those two, inspirations.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
So I'm assuming you are a horror fan in some aspect or some way.
I'm actually a pretty recent, relatively speaking, pretty recent horror fan.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So I'm not sort of the most like learned, you know, expert in the genre, but I sort of over the last 5-6 years have really gotten into it.
Uh-huh. Oh, what was that? What caused that? What made you sort of like dive into it?
I don't know. I think I just started. I had a friend who was really into it, and he kind of gateway drugged me into it. I couldn't identify anything. I don't think I could identify any specific thing that really got me into it. But yeah, so a friend of mine I started watching horror movies with, and then I just started enjoying them more than I did before. Honestly, a lot of my horror inspiration, I would say, actually comes from Doctor Who. I think Doctor Who is a great example of like real camp horror, but also it's got elements of some really deep psychological stuff. Like you think about how unassuming the idea of, say, for example, the Weeping Angels.
Yeah.
Right. And yet it becomes such a thrilling concept, like the idea of a monster that can only move when you're not looking at it.
Yeah.
Absolutely. You know, it's like a perfect example of a genre matched up with horror, because it's usually always kind of sci-fi horror. If you look at, say, for example, the concept of the Cybermen, that's just, you know, that's just Mary Shelley recycled.
The Daleks, their origins.
Horror is everywhere. Yeah. Things that humanity is scared of, you know, it's everywhere.
Yeah. 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 Well, what? Okay. So let me. What were some of the first horror movies that you were reintroduced to, and which one kind of sticks out as the one of the ones that were you were like, oh, this is interesting to me now. Like I'm kind of into it. Was there any one in particular, or any group, or like franchise or anything?
There were a couple of like one-off movies that I remember.
Yeah.
I think one of them was, I think it was called Don't Breathe.
Oh, I don't know that I've seen that.
Where they're trapped in like a group of teenagers in Detroit are trying to rob a blind guy.
Uh-huh.
And yeah, it gets real weird and creepy, but like the main concept of like them not being able to make a sound, similar in some respects to what was the film with Emily Blunt?
The Quiet Place or something like that, right?
Quiet Place.
Yeah.
That film's great. I love that.
Yeah, yeah.
That's a horror film.
Oh yeah, for sure. Nice. Well, that's cool. That'll do it. That'll definitely do it. The Quiet Place had my daughter like running to the stair. I mean, she's a teenager now, but she was like running to, got up from the couch and like went running up to the stairs to watch it from the stairs further away. And I'm like, what are you doing? You could still like, you know, she's like going away. So, all right. Well, I mean, let's shift gears. Let's talk about your second book here. I mean, Monomyth. When does Monomyth come out again?
So Monomyth, issue one is out May 3rd.
Okay.
Yeah.
And that's Mad Cave Studios, right?
Yeah. And then it'll be monthly after that.
Oh, nice. Excellent. So let's shift gears a bit to something of like, completely different. I mean, very different from Monomyth. You're a very talented writer because you've got something else coming up, which is called Death Drop Drag Assassin, coming out from Scout Comics. And when does that release?
That first issue is out June 14th. And then we go on a month's break and we come back with the rest of it monthly, I believe.
Oh, why the month break? Any particular reason or?
Just the way Scout does things. They like they've engineered this, and I think it's good for comic book stores, because anybody who wants to know the inner workings of how Diamond works, you have to get in your orders for issue two before you know the numbers on issue one.
Yeah.
So it creates a bit of chaos for comic book shops, for publishers trying to fulfill the right amount of books and not over or underprint things. So that's why Scout does the first issue and then takes a month off and then continues with the following issues for its comic book series.
That's right. I've heard some other creators come on this show and talk about that. That's right. That's interesting. I mean, that's very nice for comic shops, you know, because other companies, right, they just keep pumping them out and they don't give the retailer space to breathe and decide what they want. And then they may get stuck with books that they may not be able to sell. So that's actually really cool. Very considerate of Scout Comics, I think.
Yeah.
So what is the let's say it again, elevator pitch of Death Drop, Drag Assassin, which is a very, very fun book. Very cool.
So Death Drop is about an ex-hitman turned drag queen who is on the hunt for her missing drag sister as a rash of mysterious deaths and disappearances spreads across the city's streets. The more she delves into the mystery, the more she feels the specter of her assassin mentor haunting her every step.
Nice. Yeah, and it's, I mean, to me, what I was trying to figure out is Death Drop is like a vigilante, right? Like it's like a sort of superhero character, but it's the character is in drag. I mean, Death Drop Drag Assassin, but I guess that's what I was, when I read the issue, I was like, oh, this is a superhero, but the superhero or vigilante tends to be a drag, like what, artist, performer, that sort of thing. Correct me if I'm stepping all over myself and making myself sound like an idiot.
No, you're okay. Yeah, so Death Drop, so I wanted to do something a little bit different with that kind of like overall queer superhero concept.
Yeah.
You know, we've had a lot of people, and to great success, I might add, do the kind of like group of queer superheroes punching homophobes type of story.
Yeah.
And I didn't want to do that.
Okay.
And so I kind of took a lot of inspiration from, for example, like Jessica Jones, a little bit of like, there's a little bit of Taken in there. And so the way I kind of describe it is Jessica Jones meets Taken, but with drag queens. And so there are elements of like that superhero thing, in a sort of like neo-noir kind of way, where she's just the one with the skills to solve the problem. And we're really mobilizing that retired assassin trope.
Yeah.
You know, you see in places like John Wick. But what I wanted to do with that is really deconstruct the idea of the things we internalize, the homophobia that we internalize, not necessarily the sort of like Bible thumping overt stuff. And that's not to say that those things don't happen nowadays, but you know, other people have written to death about these things, and I wanted to do something a little different.
Sure, sure. What I was trying to understand, I guess, and if I stumbled over myself, you know, I don't want to offend anyone by saying something stupid by accident. So if I do, I apologize in advance. But it seems to me like what I was trying to figure out is that this is, it reminded me of Pose, which I was very much like a fan of. Like, I love that show. Like, I thought it was like one of the best TV shows in the past, like, several seasons. But what I was trying to figure out was the drag persona. This, you know, like Batman puts on a bat outfit. And what I was trying to understand was like,
yeah,
is that what happens here? Is this, or, I mean, I know this person is a drag performer, because at one point
it's more incident. Yeah.
No,
it's
no,
more
go ahead.
Incidental than that.
Okay.
It's, yeah. So it's not necessarily about putting on the drag to disguise your identity when you go out, you know.
Got it.
It's this person is a drag queen, and she's being sort of dragged back into a life she doesn't want to be a part of anymore.
Okay.
And she has to figure out how to navigate the violence of that life as she does something positive through that, through her community. So it's trying to balance a lot of influences on her life, but you know, a drag is her occupation, is what I would say.
Got it.
That's how she's, you know, she's survived and made a living after retiring from the, you know, the assassin life.
Got it. Yeah. Okay. So, I mean, that's where my brain was kind of like going. And I mean, I knew that this person was a drag performer. And I didn't want to make it seem like, oh, the vigilanteism is another aspect of that. You know what I'm saying? So that's what I was just trying to sort of be clear on in my own head, you know, and make it some sort of like, because it's not like a weird thing. It's not that. I'm stumbling over myself trying to explain it, but like, so basically that I understand where you're coming from. And I think it's clear in my head now, but I mean, I found this to be like a very cool, unique, interesting take on, you know, like the street vigilante, the sort of like, or like you said, the sort of enforcer that's like, I'm out of the game and I don't want to do this anymore. And the sort of persona that they adopted. And like in one instance, obviously in this book, she's ready to jump in. And then in another instance, it's like, well, yeah, I don't know if I want to help. It was very kind of interesting the way you approach that. Can you speak to that a bit?
Yeah, I just, you know, she's another complicated person.
Yeah.
And when we, so, you know, I spoke a little bit to not wanting to do the, you know, queer superheroes punching homophobes shtick.
Sure.
And of course, the first four pages of the book is,
yeah,
is exactly that. But then we really set it up to subvert that expectation, right?
Sure.
So if you read the first four pages, you think, oh, this is what I'm getting.
Yeah.
But then if you keep going, you immediately see that Death Drop gets told off for not actually in substance helping, just feeding her own ego by, you know, punching these people and not saying, all right, well, what happens to the victim after I've, you know, picked them up, dusted them off and send them on their way.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's about thinking holistically, which, you know, is something that it's a question that plagues a lot of superhero books, right? Is what happens to the person after Batman saved them?
Yeah.
And so we go pretty deep into that, in this first issue for sure. And Death Drop is a really complicated person. And again, I don't want to veer too much into spoiler territory.
Yeah.
But it's one thing to beat people up in an alley where nobody's watching. But for her, if she goes and investigates something that's very public, she potentially puts herself in the sights of her old mentor, who she basically burned, and burned, I mean, in the spy sense, not burned in the physical sense, burned and sort of left and abandoned a long time ago.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it sounds to me like the main character, you definitely allude to sort of like a backstory or a history, and there's a little bit of a flashback in this issue to that, but to the point that this person was sort of like fighting crime or doing their own thing for quite a while and then just had to step away from it, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the stepping away, I would say it's less crime fighting and more something a little more sinister. The stepping away was less stepping away and more burning down that old life in order to try and build a new one.
Gotcha. And
as we hit issues 2, 3, and 4, you'll really get a lot more detail about where that's going.
Got it. Oh, that's my brain getting stuck in sort of like the Batman Punisher mode. But this is something definitely a bit different. What about sort of like the drag culture aspect of it? Like, how much research did you have to do into that? Is that something that you're involved in your own life?
No, it's something that I guess I think it's kind of an inescapable part of queer culture at this point.
Sure.
And you know, we've had everything from, you know, seasons on seasons of RuPaul's Drag Race to things which are less about drag, like Pose, and more about like the trans experience in the ballroom scene, and also, you know, things like Legendary. I don't know if you've ever seen that, but you should definitely look that up on HBO Max. Out. If you liked Pose, you'll love Legendary.
Okay. Cool. I will check that
it's,
out.
It's the reality show competition version of what goes on Pose.
Okay. Oh, cool. Cool. I'll check that out.
That is ballroom culture, which is a bit different from what we talk about when we're talking about drag.
Gotcha.
But I think drag is just like it has this place in popular consciousness at the moment, and not all of it in a positive light. And I just thought it was a really interesting vehicle because it's so similar to the idea really of a superhero. And we bring it back to what you were talking about originally, which is that, you know, the makeup, the outfits, you know, sometimes when you think about Batman, you think Batman is his real face. Mm. And, you know, it's an interesting thing to think about when you're talking about drag, where it's like it brings out, you know, it brings out the truth in people. And we all kind of engage in drag culture in our everyday lives. Really, if you think, whatever you mask you put on when you leave the house, that's drag. You know, if I put on a suit to go to work, that's drag. The idea of drag is just men dressing up as women is kind of, I would say, a reductionist take on it, right? Because
sure,
everything, you know, not to overquote RuPaul, but RuPaul has this saying which it just rings true, which is that we're all born naked and the rest is drag. And like the idea that everything we do in our interactions with society is kind of like a performance is really interesting to me.
Gotcha. Yeah, no, I mean, it's definitely like very unique in that, or it's very interesting in that it seems like a person in this book trying to find their way through their life, but through multiple aspects. There's sort of like the, you know, I'm done with sort of like the assassin lifestyle thing. I'm also a drag performer. I don't want to do this anymore and stuff like that. So it's a very kind of interesting book in that way. What I find interesting is sort of like my reaction to it, which is automatically sort of assuming that it's kind of like a superhero thing. And, you know, in speaking to you, I'm kind of like, oh, it's not really that. Are you like running up against, you know, idiots like me who are like expecting this to be sort of like your typical average Batman Punisher thing and discovering something different and, you know, maybe being a little bit like, oh, this isn't kind of what I necessarily expected it to be.
I take that as the highest compliment, actually.
Okay. So I haven't insulted you yet, no, is like, what you're saying. That's good.
No, but like, I do like all of the comics work that I've, almost all of the comics work that I've done so far is often really about subverting people's expectations.
Sure.
Setting them up to think one thing, and then delivering them something else that they either that they, you know, they knew they wanted or they didn't know they wanted and they got. You know, looking back on Nottingham, which was my first book.
Oh, yeah, I've heard of that book. I have to check that out. I haven't read it yet.
I'll shoot you through a couple issues when we're done, because you know, like that book was all about. You know, setting an expectation of what people thought about the characters and then immediately subverting that expectation.
Okay.
So you get people who have certain expectations of who Maid Marian should be, but we set her up to be the femme fatale in this you know, medieval crime procedural, and she really became this like one of the big stars of the show when you get to see her playing damsel in distress in order to get what she wants. But really she's empowered and motivated and just all of the things that the storybook Marian isn't.
Gotcha.
And yeah, so that's kind of what I'm trying to do with Death Drop is say, all right, like, you're coming into this expecting, you know, a particular thing. For example, a superhero story. It's not a superhero story.
Yeah.
It has elements of a superhero story in there. And anybody who's like looking to find a superhero story will get something out of it. But it's also got layers of complexity more than that. And it's fun and campy, but also dark. And all of the characters are kind of like a little messy. And that's part of the fun of it, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
We get to surprise people. And if people just got exactly what they expected when they opened the book, well, then we're not doing our jobs correctly.
Sure, absolutely. But what's interesting to me is that in talking to you, I kind of grew, I had a further understanding of what I was reading. Like, I think my brain will sometimes, especially when you're kind of doing a podcast, you're reading a lot of like different comics week to week or things that kind of, you know, if you're doing interviews and that sort of thing. And sometimes you will go through something and you'll read it and you'll be like, okay, like, got it. You know what I mean? And it's like, and I was very much, my brain was very like, sort of like, oh, I'm going in this direction. And now you just kind of like opened up the curtain a little bit more to me. And I was like, oh, I have a further understanding of like where this is going. And it's great because like when I'm reading this book, there's obviously, you know, the crappy mentor, right? That taught this person and might have, you know, abused them mentally or physically and that sort of thing. And then you've got, you know, the sort of partner or side, not a sidekick, but the advisor, right? And things like that. And it's really great the way that you sort of like took everything and that are tropes in other comics, but are using them in a different way to where somebody like me who's just like, might have just seen the surface and now it's like, oh wait, there, not that there wasn't anything deep in there to discover anyway, but like now I'm understanding more where this is coming from and what it is. Am I making any sense there?
Absolutely. And I think that also it's very difficult to tell often from a first issue.
Sure.
And I hope there's like there are some surprises and some differences in that in that first issue, and some things that really drag you in. But yeah, it's sometimes hard to speak on the like complex and layered direction of a story when you've only read a fifth of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. A, without spoiling B, when you've only read a fifth of it.
Yeah.
So, you know, issues 2, 3, and 4. Really like add layer upon layer upon layer and will hopefully really surprise people with the direction that they go in.
Yeah, no, I mean, there's definitely a setup at the end that seems
when
very
I shared
cool.
it.
Oh no, sorry, go ahead.
Sorry, I think we just got a delay because I'm in bright and sunny Australia at the moment.
Oh, wow. Okay. Well, I'm in bright and sunny California. So, yeah. Oh no, go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead. Say what you were saying.
So if I talk over you, it's I'm not intending to.
No, it's totally fine. People do it all the time.
Lost the train of thought. But the pros who, you know, and my colleagues who I've shared the book with have all kind of commented on, well, this didn't go the way I thought it was going to go.
Oh, that's great.
And so, yeah, like I can't say anything other than like, that's one of my aims when I'm writing is to always keep people on their toes.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Good policy. The only thing that I wanted to ask too, or mention is about the art, because the art is, you know, we mentioned in Monomyth, It's very different than Monomyth. So it's a very different style and it's lighter. I would say a little bit more sort of like animated inspired, which I found a very interesting choice, especially when you're dealing with kind of the subject matter that you're dealing with in this book. Can you speak to that a bit?
Absolutely. And, you know, Alex Moore, the artist and my co-creator on that book, they are probably, you know, one of, and I don't mean to disparage anyone else by saying this, because all of my collaborators have been fantastic, but they just got it and took it and ran with it. And it's been just such a joyous collaboration. They understood the assignment, added their own like perspective into it as well, and just delivered something beautiful. And they really kind of got the direction I was going for, which is there's obviously some very dark themes in Death Drop.
Yeah.
But the campy aesthetic was something that I really wanted in there, because the contrast between the campy aesthetic and the dark themes really kind of speaks to what drag is. You know, it's got this kind of healing power for all of those demons, and it just came together so beautifully. The texture as well in their coloring work is it's so phenomenal. You can almost, like, just looking at the page on the screen, you can almost feel it.
Yeah.
So you know, I couldn't be more thrilled with the work that they have done and are continuing to do. You know, they've done some stuff on Red Sonja that I feel like they're about to blow up in a huge way, and I can't wait for that to happen.
Oh, that's great. That's great. I mean, I think it's, we talked a little bit about sort of like subversion before, but what I really like about the art style is that it kind of leads you to sort of expect something like light and happy in a way. And then as you go, you're sort of like, oh, this isn't that. And it's sort of like, you know, making you it's very much sort of surprising you in a way, because you're reading and there's all these beautiful bright colors and this really nice free line work and everything like that, but what you're reading is a bit heavier than what your sort of visuals are taking in, and it's a very cool effect that it has, I guess, on your brain while you're reading it. So well done.
Thank you. You know, again, I'm like, Alex, they have most of the credit, you know, and combined with, you know, once again, Lucas's brilliant lettering, I couldn't have done it without them. This was really the first comic I ever seriously sat down and wrote.
Oh, really?
And it's been through a few iterations. Yeah, it's been through a few iterations. I'm so beyond thrilled to be able to actually, you know, have it in people's hands in just less than a couple of months now.
That's so great. That's so great. And that's coming out from Scout Comics, and that's in June. Do you have like an actual release date?
Yeah, June 14th.
June 14th. Okay, you may have said that earlier. Well, that's awesome. I mean, I really enjoyed both books, David. So thank you so much for, you know, getting them out there and just sharing them with me. I mean, I hope that people pick these up and just, you know, enjoy them as much as I did, because I thought you had it's great, because I mean, this shows that you're definitely a talent, because it's like, you've got Monomyth and it's like, oh, okay, this is one thing. And it's very much this sort of thing. And then I went to Death Drop Drag Assassin and I was like, whoa, wait a minute, this is completely different. Like, and not just an illustration style, but storytelling. So congratulations.
Thank you. In the same sense that I'm always trying to surprise the reader, I'm also always trying to surprise myself.
Sure.
When I do the work. Thank you. It's very nice to hear that from somebody else, because sometimes when you're doing this, you're kind of in a little bubble. So it's nice to hear that come from someone else.
Nice. Well, I mean, I very much appreciate both books, and you know, I hope they do really well upon release, and I can't recommend them enough. I think you've got some really interesting and unique stuff here, so people should check them out. Where can people find you online, David?
You can find me on Twitter at David T. Hazan. That's H-A-Z-A-N for those who haven't put the energy into read the episode title, I guess, or just davidhazan.com is my website, and Instagram also at David T. Hazan. The other thing that I probably should mention also is that because it's a beautiful project, and I don't know if you you're across this, but we currently have Tales from Nottingham coming out, which is an anthology series that's a spin-off from the main Nottingham series. I got my start through Mad Cave's talent search, and you know, I'm now making a lot of books and very happy doing that. Mad Cave have put together this anthology with me and with the winners of their 2021 talent search, and so we have that coming out in fact today, or I guess the 26th of April, issue 3 of Tales from Nottingham is out.
Oh, nice.
And then issues 4, 5, and 6 will come out in the coming months, and we have a second printing of issue 1 coming out in June as well. So anybody who's a Nottingham fan should also get on that, because you know, the first issue sold out and is going to a second printing. The other issues, you know, I have a good feeling will sell out if you're not careful. So get on that as soon as you can, so that people don't miss out. And the same for Monomyth, honestly, because I have an inkling that that one might be a hard one to find if you're not on top of things.
Oh, that's awesome. So, that's awesome. Well, congratulations on all the success. I mean, at some point, maybe we'll have to have you back to talk about Nottingham, because it is a book that I've heard about, but I haven't actually had the time to pick up. So I'll have to check that out myself.
Absolutely. Happy to come back and talk Nottingham. You know, talking to you has been delightful. So thank you.
Well, thank you. Thank you. I very much appreciate that. Again, your name is David Hazan. The books that we have been chatting about are Monomyth from Mad Cave Studios and Death Drop Drag Assassin from Scout Comics, coming to comic shops near you. Thank you, David. I very much appreciate your time. And you just said that you were in Australia, or you mentioned that, like, that's amazing. I cannot believe it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's always a struggle finding time to do these things, because the time difference really, really screws with trying to get them, get the time to talk to people like you. But it's always delightful. So, you know,
I'm sorry if it was an inconvenience, but thank you so much for coming on.
No, today wasn't. Today I had an 11 a.m., which was nice, which is much better than my usual 3 a.m., 4 a.m. podcast.
Oh, jeez. Wow. Okay. Great, great. Well, I'll try to keep that in mind if you ever come back. So thank you so much.
Thank you.
Again, David Hazan. The books are Monomyth, Death Drop Drag Assassinin. My name is Christian Horn. This has been another episode of the Part-Time Fanboy Podcast. You can check us out on our website, parttimefanboy.com. Our email is ptf@parttimefanboy.com. We are on Facebook and Instagram, but have abandoned the hellscape that is Twitter. Thank you for listening. We will be back soon with another episode. Please be sure to check out David's books when they come out. I promise you, you will not be disappointed. Thanks for listening. Bye. Part-time fanboy.